This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. I don't own a car, nor do I drive, but that apparently is the shtick of this show. I'm joined in the studio by the man with no news this week, Mr. Arif Ruse.
Yeah, that is practically all of our show.
And then over on the other side somewhere, deep and dark and meaningful, is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
The deep part, I understand, but the dark and meaningful, I'm not sure. Hello, everybody.
I'm suggesting that perhaps you've got no lighting where you are. Oh. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Right, so as we said just now, there's not an awful lot of news this week.
No, nothing. Weirdly, nothing.
There's nothing about the national car policy or anything, or nothing like that.
I mean, in the past week, they did mention something about, like, oh, the NEP is going to be reviewed, but They did say that 2 weeks ago, so it's kind of like, whatever, man.
I think they've said that a few times up until this point, anyway.
Actually, gentlemen, what happened is, you know, after...
Oh, so there is news.
No, I'm going to explain to you why there's no news.
Oh, okay, go on then.
It's because, you know, everybody's listening to BFM. The whole of Malaysia is listening to BFM. So all the people who want to produce news, they realize that we are going to be critical with the news. So they decided not to do any news to make sure that we don't be critical against them, their news.
There's a reason you're on radio, right?
Yes.
You talk a lot, huh? Okay. So what we're going to do, we're still going to break the show down into two parts. Of course, we'll have car launches up front. And then a little bit later on, we're going to have a car buying guide, a used car buying guide for the Porsche 944. Which I believe Steve Jobs used to drive at one point.
Yes, he did.
He did, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was one of those... I'll tell you this now. It was one of those Porsches, when I first saw it, I'm like, I'm not so sure if I like this particular Porsche. But over time, as I've grown older, I'm like, I'm quite a little bit partial to it.
I agree. It's the same with me. It's the same.
Right. Yeah. Let's get on with the launches then. Let's look at the local launches first.
Yep. First of all, we had some news that apparently, well, not news actually, car news, that the Hyundai Kona is launching soon. Got any info about that, Daniel?
Actually, yes. The Kona is coming to Malaysia. They've already started doing some road tests on it. It's been on the road. There's also a couple of other new Hyundai models coming to Malaysia, like the new Elantra and the new Sonata, and they will all be launched before the end of the year. Problem is, we still have no indication of the price, because this is going to be a very sensitive segment, because you've got the Kia Seltos about to be launched, then you've got the Mazda CX-30, which is doing very well, and then you've got the soon-to-come Proton, supposedly X-50.
Yeah, the soon-to-come Proton, supposedly X50, is it's been in the works for years. But this new Hyundai Kona, I believe when it was launched, Hyundai actually promoted it as an electric car. But they also, you know, like the Ioniq, they also built a hybrid version and a regular petrol version. So apparently the one that's going to come here is possibly the 1.6 turbo that comes from the Hyundai Tucson, or the 2-liter naturally aspirated engine. As mentioned, electric doesn't seem to be quite big here just yet, so they probably won't bring that here, right, Daniel?
The thing is, there's no incentives, and you know, whatever incentives that they said in the NEP is customized. And you know, the word customized means there's no hard and fast rule of what they can offer, so everyone still guesses. So in the car industry, you cannot guess, especially in this kind of climate. You have to be very precise, like what they do in Thailand and Indonesia and Singapore and all the other countries. It's written, the rules are there. The incentives are written out and you know, presented clearly. Here, when you say customized, what does that mean? That means I like you, I give you a bit more. I don't like you, I give you a bit less. No, it's not the right way to do things. I'm sorry.
We also have Volvo, which they, I guess, launched last week. It's the new S90 T8. Well, not the new one. It's the old S90 T8 Special Edition. Okay. This one, I basically see it as some kind of stock clearance, because we have seen the new S90 rolling around in Malaysia. So it's probably going to be launched soon.
Right.
This Special Edition, basically, they give you a T8 inscription model, which is the top of the line one. And they add 35,000 ringgit worth of kit. but sold at the same price. So I think we should maybe just talk about the upcoming S90 facelift that's coming here soon. Visually, no difference. It's just going to be a nip and tuck, slightly different rear lights with a fog light right in between the lobster claw or whatever they call it right now. You get a new Aurifers crystal gear knob, which is very pretty.
Just like in the new S90.
Yes, yes. And Bowers & Wilkins sound system and an advanced air cleaner.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we can not breathe in coronavirus and the upcoming haze that's going to come here soon.
Don't say it. Come on.
Well, yeah. I kind of miss talking about the news and complaining about something, you know?
You've got to complain about something, right?
Yeah. All right. This week, though, or rather towards the end of last week, there were plenty of launches coming from the Germans. And
one German
is the BMW group, and they are launching all of their super fast M cars. So kicking off with the X3 M and the X4 M competition, their midsize family SUV, 886,000 ringgit is the starting price for the X3M. And if you want something with less space but more individuality, 904,000 ringgit. That's a lot of money. So the engines that underpin these cars basically comes from the previous BMW M3, which is the 3-liter twin turbo straight six, 510 horsepower and 600 newton meters of torque. Obviously, this is an SUV, so you get an X-Drive system as well. But all of this means 0 to 100 in 4.1 seconds.
Crikey!
That's insane. And in typical BMW M form, they've re-engineered all of the suspension bits, added huge brakes, 21-inch wheels. I mean, can you imagine just changing the tires on those? That's like probably 2,000 ringgit a piece.
That's not the issue. Can you imagine going off-road with those kind of wheels?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you go off the road all the time.
All the time in the pursuit of getting the best test drive experience.
All the time.
All the time. Yes. Behind a Tesco parking lot.
And it's rough behind there. It's rough.
The other two cars that BMW launched are their pinnacle cars, sorry. These are the BMW M8 Coupe and the M8 Grand Coupe. Basically, the 8 Series are BMW's new flagship cars. So they are the most expensive cars in the lineup, I believe, right now. And they start at 1.45 million ringgit. Good thing is that it at least it's pretty, right, Rich?
Yeah, it is very pretty, yes. I'm also looking at this, the Audi Q3 as well. But we'll get to that in a minute.
I'm a bit disappointed with you.
I'm scrolling. I'm getting ahead of myself. So I'm like, ooh, that's really pretty.
you don't call a BMW pretty. You call it handsome. It's not a feminine-looking car. Come on.
Is bold, yeah, and handsome.
Oh, yes. Bold and handsome. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Anyway, these M8 and M8 Grand Coupes, they are equipped with a 4.4-liter twin-turbo VA that comes from the BMW M5. Of course, it's all-wheel drive as well, but staggering numbers for a car that weighs 2.2 tons, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 3.3 seconds. So you know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, that was the acceleration time of a 911 Turbo S. And you could be doing that in a 2.2-ton BMW four-door coupe.
That's scary, though.
That is scary, isn't it?
Right?
Neck-breaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can also... this car also is also equipped with a carbon fiber roof, a full leather interior everywhere with contrast stitching. You get BMW Live Cockpit Professional and 20-inch wheels as well. But... as you know, with these cars, they're so expensive that BMW is offering also BMW Individual. So if you would like a BMW X3, X4, M8, M8 Grand Coupe in different colors, you can do that. You just got to pay a lot more money.
Mm. And wait, remember guys, now with this new BMWs, it might be the last of pure petrol-driven M cars.
Yes. Oh my God. Actually, that's one news bite that we could actually go to.
Yes.
By 2030, BMW themselves said that all BMWs will be either plug-in hybrid or an electric vehicle. So this, yeah, like Daniel said, this would be the last of the kind.
Yes.
Wouldn't that encourage an awful lot of people to go out and spend an awful lot of money?
I mean, expats like you can afford it, but you know, the normal Joe Malaysians can't.
Where do you keep getting this rubbish from? I mean, really?
because over the weekend I drove past Bangsar and I saw all your countrymen sitting down there having expensive meals and drinks and driving nice cars. So I'm just, you know, just explaining it in general.
Did you see me there?
I couldn't spot you because there were so many Caucasian people.
There's a reason that I'm not there because I can't afford to eat there.
Anyway, shall we talk about Rich's favorite car?
Well, I was just looking at this.
Audi.
The Q3 Sportback, right? Yeah. TFSI Quattro, 180 horsepower, slightly less space than the regular Q3, but a bit more kit and more powerful engine, around 302,000 ringgit.
Would you consider that?
No. I mean, I'd like to be able to consider that, yeah. You know, but it's an... I want to use the word beautiful, but I've been told I can't use that, and I should use manly masculine terms and say it's handsome. And it is. It's got really nice curves.
Yes.
And I think, you know, there's something about it that really appeals to the eye. It's futuristic without looking too spiky, if that makes any sense. It almost looks as though it could be some kind of submarine or something. Because of the way in which the curves flow, it's very kind of aquatic looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of
makes
sense.
A lot of sense. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
You see, and now I can use beautiful words.
Well, I get your point on it, you know, looking not too striking, because you remember, what was that movie where they had the Audi e-tron in it? It was one of the Avengers, I think.
Okay.
That looks super futuristic.
Right.
And that look. Even though that particular car is on sale right now, that kind of looks far and beyond, right?
I know which one you mean, yeah.
This Q3, obviously, is the Sportback, doesn't have the bigger boot, but the car's the regular Q3 is pretty small anyway, I don't know what you'll be losing, except a bit more money, I guess.
Well, it's 2 liter, right?
2 liter, yep. So the regular Q3 actually is 40,000 ringgit cheaper than this, and it only comes with a 1.4 engine. That's been criticized for being too underpowered for a car like an Audi. It's more of a Volkswagen engine, if anything. But if we want to talk about spending a bit more money to find something a bit more bespoke, apparently Audi's brought over the price list and the specifications of their new RS cars that they're finally selling here. So the Audi RS4 Avant, one of the greatest wagons in the world, is now here selling for 712,000 ringgit. Fair price, actually, for a car this cool. 2.9-liter biturbo V6, 450 horsepower, 600 newton meters of torque. Your typical Audi Quattro all-wheel drive, and a 0-100 time of 4.1 seconds. It's typical with Audi these days because, you know, everything's CBU. It's almost all fully kitted out. So you got 20-inch wheels, virtual cockpit, heads-up display, Bang & Olufsen sound system, and almost all of Audi's safety suites. But weirdly, again, no autonomous emergency braking or adaptive cruise control, which is kind of disappointing. Mm. They also launched the Audi RS5 alongside this, which is 726,000 ringgit. So you can either choose to have an estate or a coupe or a fastback sort of thing. Same powertrain, slightly quicker to 100 than the RS4, but again, no AEB or adaptive cruise. But the big daddies of the Audis, which I think lots of people will start considering over the BMWs or the Mercedes, I feel like Malaysians do have an inclination towards Audis. So they brought over the RS6 Avant, which is the real big daddy of all the wagons. 976,000 ringgit. A lot of money. But
it's an awful lot of money.
Yeah. We're a bit out of our depth, you know, talking about these cars. But the car comes with a 4-liter V8 TFSI engine, 600 horsepower, 800 newton meters of torque. That's similar figures to the most powerful Tesla Model S. Quattro all-wheel drive and 0-100 in 3.8 seconds. Accidentally wrote 6.8 there, but 22-inch wheels. That's huge. they also launched the Audi RS7 Sportback, which is about the same price, 988,000 ringgit, same powertrain, same kit, but a bit more carbon fiber on it. And as usual, with these German brands, you can also opt for Audi exclusive, which gives you a bit more paint colors, a panoramic sunroof, and more options for your 22-inch wheels.
All right, let's stick with the Audis then on the global launches. What have we got there?
Okay, before we go, gentlemen, I'm going to ask both of you a question. If you have a choice between the range of BMWs that were just launched, the M cars, or the Audi RS cars, which would you pick?
RF. BMW.
RF.
BMW, of course.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the M8 Grand Coupe.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with the Audis.
You're going to go with the Audis?
Yes.
Which one?
All.
All. Okay.
Wait, hold on. Before actually we go into the global launches, I should say that you will be able to see pictures of these cars on our Instagram page at BFM Cruise Control. I feel that's worth looking at right now because, you know, we're just talking about cars and how they look all day. So
that was a nice shoe in then as well. Bit of advertising there.
Yeah. Anyway, staying on with the Audi theme. Last week, Audi launched the new S3 to fight with the AMG A35 and the BMW M135i again. So any details about that, Daniel?
Not really, but I can tell you this. It's four-cylinder. It's 310 horsepower, 7-speed S-tronic, quattro all-wheel drive. Will it come to Malaysia? Now that Audi is introducing RS cars, we hope it'll come to Malaysia. But again, the price, CBU, it'll be tough to compete with the Mercedes.
I've been reading a lot of comments about this car, and especially on, you know, sites like Reddit and Twitter and Instagram. Everybody's just looking at this Audi S3 and thinking, wonder what the Golf R is going to be like. Because the Golf R is basically, the Audi S3 is basically a Porsche Golf R. So there you have it.
Mm.
Perhaps we should talk about a car that's, you know, a bit more affordable.
Perhaps.
The Hyundai Elantra N-Line. As Daniel mentioned, this new Elantra is going to be coming towards the end of the year, right?
Yes, it is.
So they apparently have an N-Line. The N is Hyundai's performance brand, and it's sort of like M Performance or something like that.
Now, why would they call it N if it's a performance brand? Just out of interest,
I'm
curious because car companies have to do this, right? Yes, if it's a sport brand, you put S, right? Yes. If it's a performance brand, you put P.
Yes, but
why is it
an
N?
Like BMW has got M, they want N. Because N comes after M.
Okay, I'll leave it at that.
But BMW M is like BMW Motorsport.
Yeah, so this is, you know, Hyundai Motorsports.
Why can't anybody answer this question for?
It's just branding. That's the easy answer there. But this new Elantra N-Line is actually quite interesting because obviously Hyundai will probably bring the regular Elantra, but the N-Line is going to be sort of like a halfway, you know, hot hatch sort of idea. So 1.6 turbo that comes from the Hyundai Tucson, 201 horsepower, 264 newton meters of torque. Of course, you can get a 6-speed manual or a 7-speed dual clutch transmission. All in all, I think it's a nice little package. You've got bigger brakes, stiffer suspension, bucket seats. I would seriously consider this if it, you know, I think is really pretty, but clearly Richard doesn't.
No, I don't mind it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the rear end of it. I mean, I've just been looking at, because I didn't really see images of the front and much of the sides. The grill on the front is very meaty and looks like something that you would use to chop up a piece of garlic. But it looks incredibly aggressive. It's almost like it has a big X across the front, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, it looks aggressive, but there's just something about the kind of balance of the shape. It looks wider than, I know it's not, but it looks wider than it does longer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's the trend of car design these days. You know, that's why the light bar is there, and they want to accentuate the width to make it look more sporty and more proportional.
And more meaty.
More meaty, yes.
More meaty.
Any words about this car, Daniel?
Well, sadly, I think it'll not do well in Malaysia because the last couple of Elantras didn't do very well. Simply because, you know, you got, let's face it, Honda is doing a really good job with their cars, you know, and Hyundai have just, I think the Hyundai design doesn't tickle Malaysians enough for them to actually want to take ownership, especially when it's above 100,000 ringgit.
Right. Yeah. You know? Great cars, though.
Yeah. And then the next problem is, you see, the N-Line, every N-Line that has come into Malaysia so far has got a lot of, you know, social media response, but nobody is buying them.
Yeah, that's quite curious.
All right. Maybe if they change the N to an S, people might stop.
Okay, Richard, maybe you should go and talk to, you know, the people in Korea because it's not the Malaysian decision.
That's a good point. Well, maybe if they listen to this show and tune in, you know, they can listen to our opinion.
Yeah, but the problem is we don't have a Korean version of the show.
That's a good point. Do we know any good translators? Time for a break. Let's have a short break. You are, of course, tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We'll be back just after these messages where we'll be talking about older gentleman. It is the Porsche 944, not Daniel. And we're looking at buying a second-hand Porsche 944. That was a cheap joke. I'm really sorry.
I know.
Cheap joke. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We've just had no news, but we've had a whole bunch of local and global launches at the top of the show. And if you missed that, you can download the podcast a little bit later on and have a listen back. Some of you might already be listening on the podcast. You probably got it via the app, via the App Store, via Google Play, or even on Spotify, for those of you that don't already know by now. Now, we're going to be talking about, though, a second-hand car and looking at where and why you might buy this one. First time we've touched on this brand in second-hand buying.
Yeah.
Porsches, particularly the Porsche 944. Why are we deciding to talk about this particular one today?
Okay, to start, everyone talks about the 911.
Of course.
From the first generation, the air-cooled, right up to the 993, right up to the model just before the latest model, because there's a lot of them in the used car market. But everyone forgets the 944 and the 968, because these are very, very uncommon in Malaysia. Not many are running around still. There are some of these cars lying in workshops, completely disassembled and rotting. There are some of them accident damaged, no money to repair because parts are not cheap. So I decided, you know, it's time to look at a car which, unusually enough, even though it's not so popular, even though it's not so talked about, suddenly prices have gone up.
Yeah.
They've gone up.
Well, I was just speaking to my dad about Porsches recently.
Oh, and, you know, Richard, this is the demographic of buyer.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's probably his birthday coming up soon or something.
But yeah, I mean, recently it seems like in the past 2-3 years, it seems like the prices of every old Porsche in the used car market has increased.
That's
dramatically.
That's true.
I remember, like, when we started doing Cruise Control, a Cayman of maybe 2007, 2006, or a Boxer of that age, they were, you know, five-figure cars, the, you know, 80,000-90,000 ringgit. But you look at in the market these days, these are going for 130, 140, and they're all, it seems like it's just going to keep on rising forever.
I wouldn't say forever, but, you know, it depends on the supply and demand. Because why? Suddenly when people see the cars too cheap, they rush out and buy them. And then when they rush out and buy them, dealers start pushing the prices up.
Yeah.
You know, and then when enough people have bought these cars, because it's a small segment of the market, normally expats. And, you know, when they start buying these cars, then they start saying, okay, you know, I think there's enough expats out there to buy these cars. We'll stop here and then we'll wait for the Malaysians to come by. Malaysians will come by and say, hey, brother, last month you were selling the car for 80,000. Now how come 130,000?
Yeah. You know? So I guess the 944... it's kind of like a cheaper option. Well, like, you want a Porsche, but you can't really access.
I think that's how a lot of people have always viewed them as well.
Exactly,
yeah, right?
Exactly, Richard. The thing is, with the 944, it's always been a nice Porsche, but it's not been a true Porsche because front engine and its engine came from Audi. Even before the joint venture and the collaboration and all that, these companies used to talk to each other. So it first started with the 924. I don't want to bring up the 924 because they're just, I haven't seen a decent 924 for the longest time. And I think there's maybe two or three still in some obscure neighborhoods, you know, just waiting for the day to be sold. But, you know, they're just sitting there quietly. You don't see them on the road. But suddenly you see these 944s, which a few years ago were going for like 30,000, 25,000, 40,000, and people were struggling to sell them. Today, they're 70, 80,000. And I think it's because, even though they're front-wheel drive, they're using old Audi engines, people think, oh, I can get a classic Porsche. That's the name. Classic Porsche for below 100,000.
Yeah.
But honestly, as an old car collector, not many old cars, but a few old cars, I talk to people who collect old cars and we always sit down and say, would we pay more than 50,000 for a 944? None of us will even go to 40,000 ringgit. Because there's no true classic appeal. It's using, like I said, an Audi-based engine. It's not very fast. it doesn't look all that exciting. And in fact, if you compare it to the Japanese cars of its era, those are the cars that we want to own.
Yeah, I mean, back then, I think mid-80s, early 90s, those were, what, the 240SX?
Yeah, Celica.
Yeah, the Celica. I mean...
The Nissan 240Z, the Mazda RX-7 Savannah.
Yeah. Honestly, lots of people would prefer the Japanese over this.
But this Porsche, it's got like that classic 80s vibe, you know?
It does.
There's something about it. You see it, and for me, it instantly transports me back to about 1983, something like that, 83, 84.
You feel like wearing a white suit.
Wearing a white suit, maybe Hawaiian suit, and, you know, a Hawaiian jacket or something. I don't know, but I remember just seeing them on the road and thinking, okay, well, if you can't afford a 911, then you'd get a 944.
Yes. Or,
you know, and... I don't know, and that's wrong thinking. I know it is, because it's a Porsche is a Porsche is a Porsche.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, Richard, this is not really a Porsche.
Right.
I mean, it comes from...
And there's people out there right now who are spitting daggers at you.
Exactly.
Of course it is.
You know, I look at this car. I've driven this car. I've sat in a few examples, beautiful examples. I've even, you know, considered buying one many years ago when it was really cheap. But after driving it, I said, you know, there's so many... A lot of the switch gear inside is from Volkswagen. You know, and I'm not talking about a modern Volkswagen. I'm talking about, you know, the old Sirocco, the old Golf, you know.
Yeah.
It's got some of its bits and pieces inside, like the door handle on the outside, you know. And then the light cluster at the back looks exactly like the Mark 1 GTI light cluster, but it's different in size, you know.
I mean, having said all this about how it's a Porsche, maybe not a Porsche, but after nearly 10 years in production, there were more than 160,000 Porsche 944s produced.
Yes.
So this, in the 20th century, was Porsche's most successful car.
Exactly. Was it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
I would never have guessed that.
Right?
I would never have guessed that.
I mean, I just want to pull it back to you know, the fact that these cars are underpowered. Yes, the engine is from an Audi, but... And you wouldn't expect a Porsche to be powered by a four-cylinder. I mean, I remember maybe a couple of years ago when the new Boxster came out with a four-cylinder, everybody was like, whoa, this is insane. This is absolutely wrong. What happened to the flat six? But this was the first of the Porsches that had a 2.5-liter four-cylinder. And a fun fact about this engine is that they used the dual balancing shafts because... You know, a four-cylinder of this big doesn't really run that smoothly. So they used dual balancing shafts from Mitsubishi, of all people. Parts really made the car run super smooth. And the story goes is that they wanted to develop one of these balancing shafts, but they found out that it would be much cheaper and much more cost-effective and much better, actually, to use a Mitsubishi part. So that's pretty interesting, don't you think? There is... Just some numbers here. The regular 944, when it was launched in 82, it was powered by 2.5-liter four-cylinder, 150 horsepower, which is, you know, I mean, by today's standards.
You look at it now and you're like, oh.
That's the power of a souped-up Myvi.
Yeah. I mean, the top of the line car is also the 944 Turbo, which was introduced in 86, 87. Those were 215 horsepower. I mean, the numbers aren't very much, but if you consider the fact that, you know, these cars are manual gearboxes, 5-speed manual.
And light.
Super light, also by modern standards. These cars weigh about as much as a Proton Previ.
Correct.
Really?
Correct.
1.1 to 1.4 tons. That's bound to be some fun, at least, if you even don't consider it as a proper Porsche. It's still going to be quite fun, I feel.
But you see, my debate with anyone who's looking at this car at today's prices, if it was around 40, 50,000 for a nicely restored unit, I'll say, please, go ahead, buy it. But at 80, 90,000 ringgit, I would say, go and buy yourself a Boxster or a Cayman, and they'll cost about the same. They will drive so much nicer. They'll be so much more fun to own, and they'll be cheaper to own.
Yeah.
I mean, that was going to be my question. I mean, let's say people have stopped listening to your advice and decided that they want to go out and buy a 944.
Right.
If they wanted to get spare parts for it, and how difficult is it nowadays to pick up spare parts from here in Malaysia?
No problem. From your motherland, Richard.
Plenty
of parts, right-hand drive, plenty of parts. And the thing is, you're talking about body parts, plastic parts, everything. There are a couple of websites online that provide very good services to deliver to you. And literally, you can buy a whole car from them, you know?
But how does it hold up, though? I mean, you know, there's a lot of plastic involved in this, in these Porsches. You know, that's got to have degraded from like 1982, 83, 84,
yeah,
surely.
Yeah.
Exactly. That is why when you jump into a new, even if you jump into the first generation Boxster, the 2.7, which was called the hairdresser's car, even that Boxster has got a better interior than this car.
Wow. You
know? Well, I'm starting to see this Porsche as somebody's project car, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it'll be a very expensive project because why? At some point, first of all, you have to make sure you get a shell that's not been tarnished by multiple accidents and rust, okay? Then number two, your interior will be all brittle and gone unless you find one of those three or four very iconic units. Like I know a doctor that works in one of the local hospitals. He's got a 944 in mint condition, but he'll never sell it. But he has put so much money because one owner from you. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So he'll never sell it. But if he ever sells it for below 50,000, I will sell one of my children and buy that car. Because that car has been garaged completely, whether it's in the hospital or at home.
Tell you what, you know, when I was doing research for this, I saw a mint condition, well, not mint, but it had 43,000 kilometers on it.
Right.
944 turbo from 1987. Okay. It's in the classifieds right now.
Right.
Selling for 160,000 ringgit.
Not worth even half of it.
160, yeah. That's the price of maybe a 10-year-old Cayman S.
Exactly. And you'll get a very good Cayman S for that. You'll get a manual Cayman S for that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I want to like the 944 because it is, but it's just, you know, like you said, you know, the price is just something to negotiate.
Yeah. But you see, people lose this price simply because they're looking at how the air cool prices have really shot up.
Mm.
So they'll think the air cool price has gone up. I can also push my price up.
Are these air cooled?
No, these are all water-cooled. These are all normal aspirated engines. Normal cooled engine. They have a radiator and everything else.
Well, I guess it's more reliable than the air-cooled ones.
Actually, the air-cooled ones are very reliable.
So long as you don't get stuck in a traffic jam, I guess.
No issue with traffic jams. I've driven many in traffic jams. No issue in traffic jams. The only thing is they're not easy to drive because, you know, there's no assistance in the power steering. There's no assistance in the gear, in the brakes and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean when you actually had to, you know, steer a car?
You actually had to work a car.
All right. Should we wrap up on that note?
Yes.
All right. Of course, ladies and gents, this has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. No news this week, of course, but we've had plenty of launches and a big old debate about whether or not you should buy yourself a second-hand Porsche 944. Do we have a yes or a no on whether you should buy one?
Oh,
I would say yes, but you have to look at a reasonable price because I think the prices that they're asking for, if you think about it, will you ever be able to sell it and get back the price? No. These are not...
You're buying it out of love, Daniel.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's not a collectible classic.
I'd look at it the same way as well. I mean, the only reason why I would buy it is... I mean, I'm born in the mid-90s, but like the only reason why I would buy one is to feel like I'm in the 80s, you know, wear a white suit and pick shorts or whatever.
And white shoes.
Whatever you used to wear.
me and him are going to have some words after
the
show.
I'm glad I'm not in the studio to see this.
I'll FaceTime you, Daniel.
Okay.
Right, it's time for us to wrap up, of course. This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. If you missed any part of this show, please go and download the podcast and have a listen back to it. Of course, we also have an Instagram page. Numbers are growing. We're in the tens now.
Yes.
Something like that.
Just about reached the tens.
Like us over on Instagram, because some people do. We'll be back same time, same place here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.